It's got a Dylan in the middle.
I know you spoke with Rory McIlroy in advance of the Masters, and then you predicted that he would win successfully. I was wondering if you got a chance to watch that roller coaster final round, and maybe what you saw that made you think he would win, and what the experience was like watching it.
Well, you know, I didn't know whether he was going to win or not. I think, you know, after the Masters, I dropped him a note and told him, I said, I don't think anybody's won by making had four double bogeys. And I said, that just showed to me how much talent you have to overcome that to win, and how you played some unbelievably spectacular shots, such as the iron at 7 that he hit over the tree that actually hit the tree. And the shot he hit at the phenomenal iron he hit at 15, the shot he hit at 17. And then, of course, he had to miss that little short putt at 18 on a hit and a pitch out on a second shot with a wedge. I mean, not very good. But, you know, he played some bad shots. He played the shot he hit at 13. I mean, I can't believe. Anyway, you know, I was very happy for him. And it was a great win. And it got the monkey off his back. And to me, the monkey was not the Grand Slam. The monkey was the Masters. The Grand Slam was a product of winning the Masters. And I mean, if you ask him which was more important, I think he would have to say the Masters, but because it was.
I'm curious if there's a moment that you remember from your career where the expectation or the pressure felt the greatest, whether it was, you know, from within you or externally.
Not really. I never really. The only time that I put pressure on myself, and probably not really the right thing to do, was that in my early, after I won the Masters in 63, 5, and 6. I can't even remember the years I won. Anyway, 63, 5, and 6, I sort of felt like I should win it every year. And I felt like if I didn't win it, my year was a failure. And I went through 3 or 4 years of that before I realized that, hey, you're not going to win this tournament every year. And the year has got a lot of other golf tournaments in it and a lot more majors to play in. And you can't let one tournament ruin your year. That was the pressure I put on myself. And sometimes it made it so that I had a hard time playing at Augusta. Once I figured out that was not necessarily the case, then I got better. But.
Dave in the middle.
Jack, over 50 playings of this event, this tournament has become very special to a lot of different people, and I wanted to hear from you why it's special to you.
Why it's special to me? Well, I think I went through a lot of that earlier, Shed, but the Masters, we're at the Memorial Tournament this week. Is that the name of our tournament this week?
Yes, sir.
And yes, presented by Workday?
Yes, sir.
Well, it's special to me because we started from nothing. We started with an idea. We came out and started looking at property, found the property that I had known as a kid, developed it into a golf course, got the city of Columbus to bring us water past the city of Dublin, and then we fed city and sewer and water back to Dublin. We've been a catalyst to grow this whole northwestern side of Franklin County. The business that has come into the Dublin area largely because of what we did here. There's so many things that have happened because of what happened here. Not just the golf tournament. The golf tournament's been great. It's grown. I mean, it's grown in stature. It's grown in the eyes of the golfing world and the players. The players love to come here and play. They, you know, it's like, you know, hey, can we get in? How can we get in? I mean, I don't know how many of the young kids that were on the borderline wrote me notes. I guess I don't have anything to do with the exemptions. But, you know, that's one of the things I did, make sure that went to the captain's club and not to me. And so, you know, but I mean, the things that have happened. And then to honor Barbara this year, I mean, that's really obviously extra special. But all the things that have happened have been certainly on the positive. It's been a huge part of the PGA Tour.
Absolutely.
And it's we didn't design this golf course or golf tournament to be a major championship. That was not our goal. Our goal was to do a tournament and be a service to the game of golf. And whatever we could do to help grow the game and further the game, and particularly in Central Ohio, that's what we wanted to do.
Doug, you want to go next?
Two things, Jack. I wanted to circle back on Rory. Did you have an inkling he wasn't going to play, and did you ever have a conversation with him on why?
I didn't have a conversation with him. Nope.
Did that surprise you?
A little bit. Okay.
Well,
I
was going to go off the rails on this one here, but you mentioned a little bit ago about Oakmont. That you thought Arnold was at 140 and you were at 142.
I don't remember if that was right or not. But
I promise you that. But
is that correct?
I don't know. I'll find out and let you know. But
okay.
What struck me is that players
and I shot 69. I shot 69, 72 the next two rounds.
Players from your generation always speak in those numbers. Today they would be saying Arnold was at even and I was at two over. Everything is always over and under. And it seems like Arnold once said, doesn't 280 always win the U.S. Open? At what point did we get away from numbers like making a two three times instead of an eagle and start saying over and under?
Well, I don't know how to answer that question, Doug, but to me, even par was always a great score at a U.S. Open. And why was it a great score? I go back to the days of Joe Dye. I thought that Joe Dye did just a magnificent job of setting up first of all, he set up the juniors, okay? He set the juniors with a modest rough and semi-narrow fairways and firm greens. He would then go to the amateur, and we had a little narrower fairways, a little bit more rough and the firm greens. He'd go to the U.S. Open, we had the deeper rough. The width of fairways that he felt like was fair, but the right width, and the greens for him. I love those kind of setups. And those setups were all designed to have par be fairly precious. Now, today, I think that the USGA and the RNA both allowed the golf ball to get away from them in 1995 when we went to a composite golf ball. I've said that many times. And as a result, we now have holes that are becoming drivable and never, the third hole at Augusta. Whoever dreamed you were going to be driving the ball on the green at the third hole at Augusta? You're going to have to stand on the green and wave the guys behind you through the hit? Come on. The golf ball goes too far. Has gone too far for a while. Then they continue to lengthen things. But to me, lengthening only does a couple of things. One, it takes longer to play. It costs more money. The whole thing, it just gets expensive. So, the game has gotten to where all of a sudden it was 4 or 5 under par, then 10 under par, then 15 under par. I never liked that. I hate to use the example of Hartford, but you've heard me use it before. And Hartford is a nice tournament, and people were very nice, but it used to be played at Weathersfield, and I never played because I didn't like the scores. And they said, Jack, you need to play. I've never played. I'll go play. I think it's you're right. I got to try to go places that I haven't been. I went there. So I went to Weathersfield. I shot 68 the first round. I was in 17th place. I shot 67 the second round. I was in 25th place. I shot 67 the third round. I was in 35th place. I finished with 67 and finished 42nd. That's why I didn't go to Weathersfield. Now, it had nothing to do with Weathersfield. It was a nice golf course. Very nice golf. I just didn't like the putter being what you what I've never believed that the putter should dictate what the golf game is. I believe that a putter. I never believed in the thing you drive for show and putt for dough. I always believe that the part of the game is being able to get the ball to the green on the green, and if you make some putts, that's part of it. It's not that the putter has to dominate. Sure, some guys are better putters. Some guys are better hitters of the ball. But it's the combination. And when it becomes a putting contest, that's where I wanted to get out of it. Even though I was a good putter, I just didn't like it being a putting contest. I always thought that what Joe Dye did in setting up the U.S. Opens, where, you know, we went to the Oakmonts, or we went to we went to Brookline the next year, then we went to Congressional, then we went to Belle Reve. All those required just a couple under par type scores, not very much under par. And par was a precious thing. Do people probably like birdies? Yeah, I can understand that. We got a lot of tournaments we make birdies. Let's have some. We don't have to make so many birdies. That's just sort of the way I look at it. And we've had conditions here. Tom Lehman shot 467s here. That's a pretty low score. That's what, 18 under par. That's 20 under par. Yeah, I mean that 268. That's 20 under par. That's a low score on this golf course. But I didn't mind that. Because the conditions dictated that. I mean, our rough was plenty deep that week. We had a little bit of rain, but not a terrible amount. And the greens just were perfect for holding a golf ball. So it allowed you to shoot a low score. I have no problem with shooting a low score when the conditions allow that to happen. What I don't like to is artificially see a golf course taken to the level where you play good shots and you get bad results. So there's a fairness and there's a right and there's a wrong about how good golf needs to be played to get a good result. And it's always a little bit on the edge, and I always like to stay a little bit on that edge because I think it really produces really good golf. And frankly, I always thought that's what a golf tournament was all about. That guy's going to play the best golf that week.
All right. We'll come over to the right here just behind Rob, and then we'll come over to you, Lauren.
You mentioned earlier growing up here and knowing the area so well. What has it meant for you throughout the history of this tournament, throughout your playing career, to be someone in Columbus, at Ohio State, just in the area as a whole, that's a role model to a lot of people, that a lot of people look up to, and what's it mean to give back to those people?
Well, I feel very blessed that the people have allowed us to do that. The city of Columbus has embraced this golf tournament. The city of Dublin has embraced this golf tournament. Central Ohio has embraced it. Ohio has embraced it. The PGA Tour has embraced it. The golfing world has embraced it. And, you know, I was just another golfer. Yeah, I made a few four-foot putts, maybe more than somebody else. But, you know, and maybe because of that put me in a little different category. But, you know, to have people accept that and embrace what we did has made me feel very, very special and very, very, it humbles me that, you know, I want to say thank you. Thank you for the help you've given us.
All right, we'll go to Lauren on this side.
That answered your question. I'm sorry.
Lauren.
Newly named U.S. President's Cup team captain Brant Snedeker is playing on a sponsor's exemption.
I can't hear you. I'm sorry.
Brant Snedeker,
yep.
Newly named President's Cup team captain, is playing on a sponsor's exemption this week. You have more captaincies than anyone. What's the biggest piece of advice you'd give Brant as he embarks on this next journey?
Oh, he'll enjoy it. I mean, Chris, I always took captaincy a little differently than most people. I always took it, I had to make sure that I had plenty of tees and extra spikes for the shoes and towels and sunscreen. And, you know, I let them go play golf. That's sort of the way I did. I never tried to make a big strategy out of being a captain. I thought the captain was the guy who makes the speeches and gets out of the way. The only thing I ever did was I got the guys and I said, okay, guys, at the start of the week, tell me who you'd like to play with, but also give me a list of who you don't want to play with. And so I honored that. And so that's basically all I did. I didn't do anything real special. I tried to get everybody playing time if I could, where it was possible. If a guy told me he didn't want to play and didn't feel he was playing well, then I honored that. I think Brad has to listen to them. He's gonna love it. He's gonna have good guy. All the guys like him. He'll have some moments where, you know, he'll say, "This is a tough decision." It's all right. That's what the captain's supposed to make. But he'll have a great time.